33511 User Experience. For this podcast snack, we're going to be looking at the principles of affective experience, which is really about emotion. Now, for the last two principles chapters, these have been very much in the traditional HCI quantifiable kind of domain. The next two are very much the sort of new romantic ideal UX-ish add-ons, whereby they're much more qualitative and much more intangible, much more difficult to measure, much more difficult to understand if you're doing it right. So for whatever reason, we like things and we like different things. So for instance, I love the Metro UI, Microsoft's Metro UI. I love it. I love the fact that it doesn't scroll vertically, it scrolls horizontally, it's much more intuitive to me. And the whole font system that it uses just appeals. I can say this to the person next to me and they hate it. They hate the fact it scrolls in a way that they don't expect. They hate the fact that it's using active tiles, for instance. They hate the font. So this is really tricky to do. Sometimes it's a Marmite situation. You'll either love it or you'll hate it. In fact, I would suggest that one of the things that you really want to avoid is people to just be meh okay with it. That there's nobody who's going to be an evangelist for your stuff because it's just not inspiring. And if you haven't got some people who hate it and some people who love it, you're doing something wrong. Really, you want people who have got strong opinions about what it is you're doing. Just, I hope, as you have. Now, there are different kinds of ways we can have these emotional responses to things, specifically items of technology, artifacts that have technology in them, or software and user interfaces. These are visceral, in the stomach, if you like, the thing that we first feel when we see something we really like, we really love, we really want to have it, we really want to use it. Behavioural, how does it work? How does the thing work in practice? What's its behaviour? And when you're using it, does it feel good? And reflective, did you like it when you actually were using it? Remember that in second chapter really, we talked about the fact that we've got episodic UX, and you can link back this aspect to the episodic UX that we were talking about then as well. So we're thinking about, how do you feel when you first encounter it? How do you feel when you then, after first encountering it, you start to use it? And then how do you feel after you finish using it and you're reflecting about both seeing it and then using it? How does that work? Beauty is really a very interesting and tricky thing to think of, as is visual complexity and the visual aesthetics of design. And so I think it's probably useful for you to read in pretty much in detail these parts, certainly 12.1. Okay, and we can see that we move over in 12.1.3, the visual aesthetics and design, onto the psychology of aesthetics, and we can see that there are different kinds of ways that we can encounter visual aesthetics from Jacobson's framework. Okay, so this is the framework wheel that you can see there. On page, my page, it's 186. It might be slightly different on your electronic copy. Now, we're going to skip over, for the sake of brevity, narrative art and visual aesthetics and visual attention. Although visual attention is very interesting, and again, I bring you back to attention blindness that we looked at in section two, whereby you were counting basketballs being passed between people wearing different coloured vests. And we can understand that what actually grabs our visual attention is very unique, and understanding what can grab our visual attention is really something that we need to think about with regard to our designs. Now, one of the easiest things to create visual attention wise is a face. So people are always attracted to faces. They always look at faces before they look at anything else. So if you want somebody to look near to, say, a sales offer or anything like this, then you want to put a face near it, because that's the first thing that we will be involuntarily attracted to. There are a set of effective principles and touch points that, again, just as in the usability one, I've collated and then summarized, I've thrown some away, I've added some from the usability and accessibility domain, and we've moved some back into the final principles that will be coming up next. Remember here, or note at least, that I'm using the term called touch points. What does that actually mean? Well, touch points is something that you'll see through marketing and through design, and it's really about something whereby a brand, or at least a style, is able to convey itself without words, without saying very much, but just, for instance, Apple. The Apple symbol is a touch point, because you get to understand that this is an Apple product, and therefore you associate with that product quality, for instance. An easy interface, well designed interface, and something that designers have and you want to show. Okay, and so that's something that you should think about as well. There are a set of touch points that are created, typically around logos, for instance, too, whereby they're shorthand for something. So it could be quality, it could be an exciting experience, it could be great aesthetic design, lots of stuff come along with touch points. And as I say, they're meant to be shorthand for some emotional feeling that you're going to have towards that thing. Okay, so before we get going, think about effective computing. So there's a difference between effective computing and emotion, if you like, the my potted effective principles. Effective computing is pretty much sort of put forward by Rosalind Picard at MIT, and it really talks about the ability for a computer to recognize emotion and have emotion. Okay, it is not the ability for us to build and design into our computer something which will trigger emotion and emotional responses within the user. So what we're doing here is we're understanding how to design in, or at least considering how we might design in aspects that will enable somebody to really feel good about the experience that they're having, and will really be able to have an emotional response towards the experience they're having. Effective computing, on the other hand, is for people is for computers to understand emotion to start with, and then to have emotion. I think that's a whole tricky subject, but there is a difference there between the two. So just don't get confused between these. If you see something that says effective computing, and then you'll know that really this is more about computers recognizing and in the end having emotion than a system that we've designed having generating an emotion in a user. So what are these potted effective principles then? Well, the first point is to facilitate quality. So what we want to do is facilitate quality, so that we want to put forward some sort of idea of something that is a quality product. Now, some of that will be learnt, but some of that is just in the look and feel. For instance, you can tell if something feels plasticky. For instance, if it's got a plastic case, then that's different to a titanium case. The feel is different. You know the feel is different, and you make a quality decision based on that that feeling. Facilitate aesthetics. So things must look great, must look really good. facilitate flow. It means that you need to get into the experience that you're having. Now remember, flow is a really tricky thing to think about. So flow is something that you can describe in the Yerkes-Dodson curve that you'll see here, but also it's something that you will also find in one of Chmielinski's, well, actually, it'd be nice if I could actually pronounce the name properly, flow ideals, okay, and we'll get to those as well. So the Yerkes-Dodson curve pretty much says that there's a sweet spot between having strong performance in something, so doing something really well, and how aroused you are by it. And when I say aroused, I don't mean in any carnal way, if you like, but in a standard emotional state that we feel that this is a really good thing. We're really, you know, if we're in a game, we're excited, we're on the very edge of our performance curve, if you like. At some point, when things become too difficult, then yeah, you don't really like them anymore. You're not as aroused. Your performance isn't very good. So when there's too much arousal, your performance goes down. When there's too little arousal, then your performance also goes down. So there's a sweet spot through the middle. And this is mapped out in the Yerkes-Dodson curve, which is what you should also try to kind of put forward and make sure that your systems have this in place. Facilitate pleasantness. Facilitate satisfaction. Now, what do we notice about these principles? Firstly, for a scientist, they're very subjective. They're very intangible. What does it mean by pleasantness? How might we measure pleasantness? How do we measure satisfaction? And what do we really mean? Aesthetics, as we've discussed, some people think the aesthetics of the Metro UI is awesome. All right-thinking people, I would suggest, think it's awesome. But other people think it's terrible. There's a disconnect because we think of things and we experience things differently. And I think that's something that we need to kind of understand, that it's very difficult to quantify these things. They're definitely qualitative. It's very difficult to measure them because there's lots of intangibility and things that are unsaid in them. Okay, and just understanding how we can measure them, well, that's a really tricky thing to think about and to do. Now, there's a caveat here. I'm going to show you, or please certainly just search for it. Have a look for Ling's cars. So Ling's cars seems to break all of the principles of good design. In fact, there's lots of discussion about Ling's cars through design forums and people who are good designers. There's always a discussion about Ling's cars and what it means and why it means it. It's really, really tricky thing to understand. When you look at Ling's cars, which you can see here, you can just see there's a figure, but actually just go online and have a look at this. It breaks pretty much everything. And I've been thinking about this for quite a while. What is it that, why do people like it? Why is it so, I mean, yes, it is so bad, but why? Why is it so bad? I mean, why do people trust it? Why do people think this is a good thing? I mean, you know, the actual site itself is interesting because it used to run on a little server under her desk. She made it herself, built it herself. And it also has the interesting thing that in the chat, the chat transcript is included in the sale or the rental of the car, the leasing of the car. People can't say anything in the chat to get you to buy something, and then suddenly you realise in the actual terms of service that this isn't correct. The terms of service are modified by what's promised in the chat, and so that's a really interesting thing to think about. Now, I personally think that this is a personality principle. I think the personality principle is, if you like, the king principle, the thing that trumps everything else. That people buy into Ling's personality. They buy into the website because it looks weird and goofy. They buy into Ling as a person. They buy into Ling's cars. They like the fact that it feels a bit weird. It's definitely an outcrop of her personality. And so because it's an outcrop of her personality, people love it. And I think this trumps all the other good design practice we've seen. For 90% of cases, the good design practice is fine, because most real brands or most companies, etc., they are multi-personality. They're not just one person. And they're kind of safe and in some ways boring, I suppose. Whereas here, it's just one person's personality, and you like it or you don't like it. And there you go. And I think that's something that can trump everything else. Okay. So in summary, what we can find is that the principles of emotion are tricky to isolate. They're subjective, they're intangible, they're qualitative, and they're difficult to present to, say, commissioners. They're difficult to present to companies. They're difficult to present to people in general, because there's nothing really to attach to. Okay, because they are so difficult to measure. So you should also realize that effective experience is different to effective computing, and how it's different. And you should read the first author of the optional further reading, Chemskalamskahili, as work on flow. I cannot pronounce that name, I'm sorry. I always mangle it. But that's an excellent book, and it's really it's really the first book, I think, that in this particular effective experience you ought to look at if you don't look at anything else. Okay, and with that, we will move on to the next set of principles in the next one. Okay, see you in the next podcast.